And comparison thinking is an epidemic in the industry because it is constantly them comparing themselves to other agents. And what did that person send? What did they say? What did they do at the end of the year after I busted my ass? The clock resets to zero and oops, I got to do it all over again now, right? That process drives that self-esteem further down.
Hello, welcome to episode 162 of the Smart Agents Podcast. As always, my name is Michael Walter, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, we are joined by business coach and motivational speaker Lance Pendleton. With more than two decades of training sales professionals and experience as a national head of agent development for Compass, he has helped over 30,000 real estate agents grow their businesses. Throughout today's conversation, we focus on overcoming overwhelm and limiting beliefs en route to having a successful real estate career. Lance also shares how his philosophy on coaching might be a little bit different than what you're used to. But before we get on to the day's featured interview, the all-new Smart Agents magazine has launched and is full of insights and strategies designed to help real estate agents grow their businesses. Inside, you will find interviews and advice from leading real estate professionals, marketing tips to flood your business with leads, and even swipe and deploy files full of practical tools to enhance your business. Subscribe now to receive your copy of the printed magazine each month and instantly get access to our online agent community and members-only templates. Click the link in the episode description or go to smartagents.com/magazine. Also, if you find this conversation useful, please be sure to share it with colleagues or friends. The Smart Agents podcast streams on all major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And finally, if you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or real estate tips to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. We're always on the lookout for new stories to share. All right, let's get on to the day's featured interview with Lance Pendleton. Our conversation just scratched the surface of what he has to offer, so be sure to check out his website, lancependleton.com, for more. I've included a link in the episode description. The way I like to start everything out is if you could just introduce yourself to us a little bit, who you are and a little background on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on. My name is Lance Pendleton. I am the former national head of agent development for Compass Realty. I oversaw 30,000 agents for all of their sales training and knowledge base. Prior to that, I was a chief innovation officer for the largest Sotheby's Realty affiliate in the U.S. My background's in behavioral psychology and the science of well-being. And, many years ago, I used to work for Apple too. But other than that, though, my current job and role is I work with agents on executive function skill sets. And I run a company that works exclusively with people to help develop sphere nurturing processes and also engage with how they operate. So what I like to say is, I'm kind of like coaching agnostic. I don't care what program you take. I care about how you can make that more effective in your daily life. So,
right. So in your time with Compass, you know, with the agent recruitment and agent development, what were some of the things that you were seeing that kind of led you down this path to start, you know, doing the coaching agnostic and making sure that people are actually utilizing the tools that they're learning?
Yeah. So it's a great question. Couple different things that I noticed over time. One of the biggest things that I saw when I first got started was that agents operated in a couple of consistent states, no matter what. At a certain level in real estate, when you are when you're done being new to the business and you start gaining a little bit of traction, what starts to happen is you get overwhelmed. And overwhelmed predominantly in what I saw from folks was this constant feeling of I'm trying to be all things to all people at all times. Agents would put themselves 28th. On the list of importance because they needed to be scrambling from thing to thing to thing. The second part that I noticed was that agents were operating in only two periods of time. And people come to me all the time. They're like, Lance, teach me time blocking and time management skills and all that. I'm like, that's all BS. Because what agents struggle with is not time management, it's prioritization. And it's because they only operate in two periods of time. You ready? The only two periods of time in a real estate agent's life is now and not now. That's it. And they're really good at the now. The problem is that all that not now stuff that needs to happen, it doesn't really become effective until it's now. So what do I mean by that? Like those common things that I saw were agent is in the middle of doing something. They're working on planning out their week. Maybe they're, you know, doing some, getting a listing presentation together. Client texts. I want to go see 123 Main Street. That's a now problem to them. So they stop doing what they're working on, immediately shift into that. So that listing presentation they were working on, which needs to be presented in 4 days, gone. So what happens then 4 days later at 8 p.m. at night when the presentation's the next day, that became a now problem. So do you see how that works? Like they're only ever operating in that state of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like the idea of, you know, my son has a project to do, but, you know, one of his little buddies comes over and, you know, wants to go out and play football, and that project gets put on hold until, you know, the night before it's due. And all of a sudden we're up until 9 o'clock working on the thing.
100%. And what's interesting, too, though, is in certain cases that's we all have a part of that. Right. Mm-hmm. But then there's a unique part that is more in the behavioral elements of something that neurologically there are some people and a lot of agents do operate this way, where they are built and designed to require external pressure to do something. And that was a big part of what I saw commonality in a lot of the people that I was working with, was that, again, it wasn't even intentional to, I'm going to leave that because I just don't feel like it. It subconsciously was this thing that was like, I'm going to push that because I got to wait until that has major pressure to it to drive me forward into doing it. And I saw that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's relatable to, I mean, even for myself, it's relatable in different tasks and things that come up. You know, I might have my daily to-dos, but, you know, there are a few of those things on there that, you know, maybe I'm a little bit more motivated when I know that deadline's coming up. So how do you help agents kind of prioritize those tasks to make them, you know, make them that moment, you know, they should be getting done in that moment rather than when it's pressure time, you know?
Yeah. Well, first of all, every Monday I run a group called The Essentialist, and The Essentialist is to help agents start the week really quickly with one sheet, the same sheet we work from every week, to understand prioritization for the week and to work from that during the week. So right off the bat, we all need help and support in some capacity, but doing it communally together, where you show up, you plan the week, you do your thing, but you do it in kind of a fun, creative way that allows you to help prioritize better, is the first thing. So it's not like just, here's a tip, go figure it out, right? I see that all the time. Agents go to training seminars and coaching programs and all this stuff. They all whip out phones. They take 500 pictures of the slides on the screen because when I get home, I'm going to do this. They do nothing with any of it, right? So we need to have some type of supportive structure. But the prioritization element is first and foremost to be able to recognize what is important versus what's not. Because what feels important isn't actually what's important. And I'll give you an example. So the things for most agents that they love doing and they really enjoy, they think in their mind, hey, I'm going to go do this thing, but I'm only going to do it for 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes turns into an hour and a half because they get pulled into it. It's excitement. It's stimulating. Dopamine levels go up. More behavioral science nerd stuff, but like all that stuff kicks in. Now take the reverse of that. Something that should only take 5 minutes, but they don't really want to do, feels like it's going to take 2 hours. So the same thing is separated by, again, the same principle concept of if it's something that emotionally makes me excited and I feel good about it, I do it for too long and don't have the ability to retain time with it. If it's something that I don't feel like doing and I don't want to do, even though it won't take that long, it feels like it's going to take longer. So therefore I push it. So that is like a cycle that I see a lot.
Right. So what are some of the things that people can do to kind of break that cycle a little bit to where, you know, is it as simply as the, you know, the things you don't like doing, like actually tracking how long it takes to see, like it really isn't that big of a deal?
That's a great question. So there's a book out there, I believe it's called Eat the Frog First. And that principle concept for a lot of people is take the thing you don't want to do and do that first before you do the other things. Believe it or not, from my experience in the agent community, and especially, and I say the agent community, I work with solo entrepreneurs across the country. And so it's not just agents, but what I've noticed in that is that actually does not work for them. And what you want to do is you want to have a better balance of doing something fun in conjunction with something that actually requires that. The best way to do this from my experience is to use timers. And I know it sounds stupid and dorky and weird and kind of nerdy, but if you say, hey, there's this thing that I got to get done, and I'm going to do it for 15 minutes, even though it feels like this should take 2 hours. And you set a timer and you're just going to start it. Let's say I got to organize my database. It's a mess. That sucks. Nobody wants to do that, right? But I'm only going to do it for 15 minutes. So you set a timer, 15 minutes, sit down and start doing that. When that timer goes off, you have freedom of choice. You can say, cool, I did 15. Good. I organized some people. I can move on. Maybe I do 15 more tomorrow. Or you can say, nope, I'm feeling the flow, 15 minutes again. Keep going. Hey, guess what? 15 minutes again. That process allows you to circle back into, one, do I feel like I'm tired of doing this? Two, does it feel overwhelming? And three, most importantly, the way that we're wired, we are more likely to engage in something if we know it's for a finite amount of time, and then we have the freedom of choice to be done with it, right? And that's, again, what I see folks, if you take that perspective, it reduces those feelings of overwhelmed in the things that we don't feel like doing. So all the not now stuff becomes less ominous.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I personally use timers because, you know, working from home or in a home office, you know, you kind of think a distraction shouldn't be an issue, but you get into something and all of a sudden, you know, like the phone will go off and you're, you know, over here and then I might be over there. And then that project that maybe should have taken an hour can stretch into an hour and a half just because of little things. And so I know, like for me, I will set timers where I have to be locked in. Like I'm not allowed to look other places. And I feel like, you know, with agents, you know, especially if they're working from home offices or they don't have that, you know, real structured, you know, kind of business model, that can be something that gets them as well.
For sure. And again, structured business model is, that's a dirty word. I mean, because if you think about it, business planning and real estate, every brokerage come October starts going ballistic. Oh, business planning. We got to do business planning. It's time for business planning. We do this business planning. Fun statistic. Only 5% of real estate agents across the country have a business plan they work on or from during the course of the year. Yet 75% of them make one. It's just, it's another exercise in like magical thinking of things that we want to, you know, one of the classes that I teach is how to create outcomes and stop trying to create goals. And I love Rebecca Shafir one time, who is a wonderful woman at the Halliwell Center that I work in partnership with from time to time on some projects, said to me, you know, Lance, goals are for people who want to win once. And that's what it is, where if you help think about outcomes and things like that, it's just like, you know, business planning really should be more about making things smaller and more effective rather than these great big things, because it feels overwhelming.
Right. Absolutely. So, and that kind of leads into my, you know, next question, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but, you know, with all the different, the coaches and the different lead generation seminars, it's always like that, you know, if you're going to one, you know, it could be all about, you know, you should be hammering the phones and cold calling all day long and, you know, make that your number one priority. And then the other ones like stop the cold calling, do the, you know, the outreach and do the past client referral. So when it comes to those things, people can get overwhelmed and thinking, you know, gosh, okay, maybe what I've been doing isn't working. Let me shift gears totally. Where do you see people that, you know, attend those types of seminars? What is getting them tripped up? It, you know, psychologically thinking that I have to stop everything that's, you know, even show me a little bit of success to go in this other direction.
First and foremost, I think the thing is understand how those systems are designed and created is part of the problem that makes that difficult for somebody. I genuinely look at the healthcare. I look at the coaching industry like the healthcare industry. They're designed for symptom treatment, not treating the cause. And what I mean by that is if you go to the doctor and you've got high cholesterol and you talk to the doctor's gonna be like, great, here's a script for the pill. Take the pill, cholesterol. We're going to drive that back down. They're not asking you how you eat, what you eat, if you exercise, what's your stress level. Let's formulate a plan around dealing with why that cholesterol is elevated. It's like script, plan, symptom, done, right? Coaching is very much the same. It is not about why are you consistently inconsistent with this. It's about, we're going to break you out of that by giving you the perfect script. Make the 200 calls, right? Or write handwritten notes. Or so it's not, and I'm not saying it's bad per se. It's just though something that if you're not dealing with, why can I not build consistency and healthy habits around doing that? No magic thing that somebody gives you is ever really going to work. So for me, that's why I call what I do coaching agnostic. I don't care if you do 200 calls. I don't care if you do handwritten notes. I don't care about that stuff. In as much as how do I help you build consistency and also not make it feel overwhelming. Coaching in general treats people all the same, right? Here's the playbook. Here's the thing. Here's the, what I do with people is more individualized. It's based on who you are and what feels good to lean into the natural skill sets and the things that you're talented at. And then how do we take little pieces of that not now to incorporate those small into what you naturally love doing? So coaching on the whole, how do people become more effective with it? is to reduce the amount of what you're actually doing with it. What I mean by that specifically is if someone says make 200 calls, my goal to start with is making five. Can I make five? How did that feel? What was the outcome of that? Is this working for me? Can I do five more tomorrow? If I don't do five tomorrow, then let's look at why. Why didn't I do five? Oh, well, because we got up in the morning because one kid was sick and they were going to stay home. The other one couldn't find their shoe. It happened to be in the freezer. I don't even know how the hell it got in the freezer. Like all of our life stuff that kicks in, right? Is let's look at that, because real estate and our personal lives, it's all intermixed. And so if you're not looking at what's happening and how do I create better, more simplified consistency and balance in my life around these things, and the greatest coaching programs in the world become ineffective.
Right. When it comes to, you know, setting up those processes for yourself and really kind of helping identify the distractions and the things that are keeping you from just achieving those, you know, those smaller goals within the, you know, the process, what are some of your tools or exercises that you suggest people to actually kind of take stock of what might be holding them back from achieving those smaller goals?
So one of the things that I love doing with agents is having them journal what they do all day. If you really spend time and you just have a notebook and you all day, call it 4 or 5 days in a row, just jot down all the things you're doing. And I don't mean just, you know, I made 10 calls today. I mean, like everything you're doing, brushed teeth, got up at this time, did these things. If we really look at that, that's the first step to being able to understand that now, not now problem. Because what I will challenge people on in that system is, okay, so you were doing X. What were you supposed to have been doing when you were doing X? And they'll go, oh, well, that was the time I was going to be sitting down to make my 10 phone calls. Oh, that was actually the time I was supposed to be working on. But, and when we see those distractions kick in, helping them design blockers for those distractions or how to manage that process better. It's so much of what I see with the struggle is not about how do I find time to do things. The struggle is how do I say no to things and stop doing things, right? It's not about adding more. It's actually subtracting and removing, but there's such a fear factor. And Michael, I see it often. There's so much fear about this FOMO of missing out, disappointing people, letting someone down. It's underneath all of it. And that underlying anxiety, I call it the white noise. Living in that sort of white noise is the biggest blocker that I see to people's long-term success and happiness within what they're trying to do in any type of a solo entrepreneur business.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to those distractions and those things, and I really am a firm believer in the kind of remove, you know, subtracting, not trying to do so many different things. And, you know, even, you know, with our company, we use Slack and there's different channels and different, you know, wings of the business that you'll get messages from. And there's just sometimes it's like, I will not answer things for the next hour. And that's okay. If it's an issue, you can call me and I'll, but I don't need to, I had to take the pressure off myself to answer everybody's question in the moment because I wasn't getting my job done by handling everybody else's issues.
That's right. And to think about what you just said too, though, is how many of those things were truly things that required your input?
Right.
You know, as you said, if it's an emergency, call me. Shoot me a text. Otherwise, you know, right. And I think that's, I notice where I see this a lot. If I can go, I do a fun thing sometimes at the beginning of when I give big talks and I'll give out a prize for whoever has the highest number of unread messages in that red dot on their email. Yeah. Right. I had a guy the other day that had 108,000 unread messages. And I said, you know, that's right there just for everyone. That's the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. You have this system that allows you to take better control over your life. And we can put certain things in place and parameters to not make that get as crazy as it does. But yet we just leave it there. And people don't realize that every day you look at that red dot. I mean, the phone itself and the color red was designed intentionally to keep you engaged in it. That was intentional. You're looking at 108,000 things that you may be missing, that you're failing on, that you're not getting done, that you didn't have time to look at. That actually does take a toll on you mentally, spiritually, and psychologically. It's a thing, right? So you have to find that balance in that space to be able to say, what are the small pieces I can put in play to reduce that kind of stuff, just like you did.
Right. So when you're working with a client or somebody, you know, that you're kind of helping navigate, kind of taking back control, what are some of the things that you're telling them and helping guide them to recognize when they're starting to kind of drift off path a little bit, you know, because I think that's a really important thing is to be able to quickly recognize when I'm drifting and I need to kind of get back on track.
The first thing that people will notice when they're starting to fall into the cycle and they're drifting is a general feeling of overwhelmed. And I use the term overwhelmed mm-hmm. because they start to feel like, oh, I forgot. Oh, I didn't. Oh, I got to get this done. But the kids need to be picked. That's the very first thing. The second thing at a deeper level, like part of what we do with the Essentialist program is we start planning out the week and prioritization. The first thing we look at is self-care. And what's interesting, and when we look at self-care, is we look at not the typical things you think of self-care in, I'm going to meditate today, or I'm going to go get some exercise. Yes, that's good. We look at self-care as one of the things we have on there is acceptance. What's something that I'm struggling to accept? And that means something I don't have control over that I keep thinking I can gain control over, right? We have saying no on there. Pick one thing you're going to say no to this week, because agents say yes to every, it doesn't matter what it is, even if they understand it. Like speaker coming in to talk at the office sales meeting and like, yes, I'm going. I'm like, what are they talking about? I don't know. Like, well, then why are you going? You have no idea what it is, right? The guy could be talking about his favorite cat breed. That has nothing to do with your bed, but you're going to go anyway. Why? Because you're afraid of disappointing people. You're afraid of, if I'm not seen there, what does that look like? So when we talk about self-care and things like that, there are very specific reasons we go into this. Because when you're not doing those, that's the first marker that people then see that leads to that overwhelm. So does that make sense? It's kind of like looking at what do I need to do for me, but in a very different type of way to prevent and avoid. So when you feel scrambly, well, are you saying no to things? No. Are you trying to control stuff that you can't? Yes. Are you? Mm-hmm. Those are the markers.
Right. So, you know, kind of dovetailing off this a little bit, you know, the real estate industry, it caters to people that are super outgoing and have, you know, there's just a certain, you know, type of person that it really, you know, the really successful ones have that, you know, that aura of success, and they're just super positive. You know, you just kind of feed off their energy, but for so many of them, they do have those own limiting beliefs in their own head that keeps, you know, this whole storm going on and the overwhelm. What is it about this industry, or you know, the people that kind of are drawn to this industry, that you think, you know, keeps up those cycles of limiting beliefs?
Wow, do we have 2 hours? that's a long, in-depth thing. The short answer, there's a couple of consistent things that I've seen over the years in working and in business and again in just any solo entrepreneur practice. Let's be clear. Successful agents that I see by default, even though they may struggle with all the things I talk about, let's talk about what they're amazing at. They are more charismatic. Their general ability to create more meaningful relationships faster is far greater than the average person. Their empathy skill sets are far greater than the average person. Their ability to read somebody and actually know what they're thinking or feeling before that person has said anything is far greater than the average person. Their speed to problem solving, their speed to solution, way higher than the average person. Ironically, great with other people in that area, not great with themselves in that area, but like for what they struggle with solutioning for themselves, they're like 20 times better with somebody else. These are all huge assets to be involved in a particular relationship. Now, remember, what is real estate? Okay. I love when agents say, you know, I help people buy and sell homes. No, you don't. You don't buy and sell homes. We have to stop saying that. Here's how I know this. You ready? If you took a house and you put it on the market and you put the price super, super low, what would happen?
Right.
It would sell. Right. What the hell does that have to do with me? Nothing, right? So, and by the way, technically, I still have a license. I was an active agent at one point in time. But so I don't buy and sell homes. What we do is we help people navigate the third most stressful time of a human being's life, right behind death and job loss. The third most stressful time with the single largest financial asset they have. No part of that engagement and relationship, right, has really much of anything to do with like market statistics and data, and that's available everywhere now. When you look at what the agents, like that core skill set that we're talking about and all the things I just mentioned before, they feed directly into that part. And that's what creates long-term consistent health of relationships, engagements, and help people feel more supported in navigating those incredibly difficult and challenging times of what happens, right? So that's a really big part of where agents don't accept and acknowledge that as a valid thing. What they do is they get into comparison thinking, and comparison thinking is an epidemic in the industry because it is constantly them comparing themselves to other agents. And what did that person send? What did they say? What did they do at the end of the year after I busted my ass? The clock resets to zero and oops, I got to do it all over again now. Mm-hmm. Right? That process drives that self-esteem further down. And that's at the root of what you're talking about, is that why is it possible that some of the most successful people that are tremendously charismatic and positive and engaging and nurturing have this underlying thing that says, you know what? Kind of making this up as I go along. You know, maybe the other shoe is going to drop here eventually. You know what? Now, there's not going to be another deal yet because I'm just kind of BSing my way through this. Eventually, I'm going to be found out. Like, that's got to stop. Because it's just not true. If you've been in this business for 5 years or more and you're financially self-sufficient, you're what I deem a survivor. You're a survivor. The average agent doesn't last more than 24 months in the business when they first come into it. And right now, I think last statistics I saw was 90% of all real estate sold in the US last year was sold by only 10% of the licensed agents.
Right.
Like, statistically speaking, you're the top of the top. You don't feel like it. No one rolls out of bed being like top 10% in the country. Why? Right. Because you're comparing yourself to all these other people all the time in this need to try and differentiate yourself. If I want to paralyze a real estate agent, all I got to do is ask them, what's your value proposition?
Right.
Local market knowledge, trusted advisor. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Right.
But there's so much more.
Right. So when you are, you know, working with people and trying to get them to realize that, you know, to find, you know, that there's that imposter syndrome and that whole like fear of being found out. But all those people that you helped through the year, you were like the greatest expert, like you were their, you know, Superman, Superwoman that helped them handle that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how can people kind of draw on that, you know, feeling and like pump themselves up?
So a couple different ways. One of the best things that I like doing is agents always ask for testimonials. Mm-hmm. And I like giving a different way to think about testimonials. One, I don't like the lack of or the loss of control and what people are saying on the internet about me in general, because again, people that may have a wonderful experience and all of a sudden say, you know, oh, Lance was great. He was so helpful, this, that, and the other. We wish we could have got. That was outside of my control. I can't control what the market says. Right. Like, it has nothing to do with me, right? But
right. So
one of the best ways I've seen to do this is reach back out to those people and say, hey, I'm doing a little bit of self-reflection and I'm trying to find some of the things that I know that people really enjoy working with me and some areas of opportunity. What would you say was the best part of working with me? And what would be one thing that you think would be an area of opportunity that I could improve on? And just email that to somebody and watch what you get back. Doesn't matter if you closed 6 years ago with them. Ask. People are happy to tell you those things. And when you get those things back and you see what people are saying about that, two things. One, it is the best reminder of how you impact and affect someone's life and what role you play in partnership with them, because it's a partnership. And two, when they say, oh my gosh, you were so thoughtful and attentive. We felt totally nurtured through this process. And even when that big weird thing happened, you were amazing in handling X, Y, and Z. Here's what you do. You copy that and you reply back and say, oh my gosh, I cannot thank you enough. That was really amazing and meant the world to me. If you wouldn't mind, if you click the link below, just copy what I just sent to you there. If you paste that in my Google review, that would really mean a lot to me. Thank you. Now you're controlling what someone is actually pasting into that, and you're selecting the verbiage that's going out there in it, right? Rather than, here's a link, give me a review, because God only knows what people are going to say. Those comments can be used in your social media. Those comments can be used on your website. Those comments can be used, but I save them. Mm-hmm. I actually have a folder in my email that's called promoters. And promoters was an old Apple thing. It was when someone would say they were detractors and promoters. But I have those. And sometimes when I have like a really crap day, I'll just go back and click on that and remind myself like, oh, this is why I do what I do. This is who we affect. And this is the impact that we have on people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the real estate industry, you do have such a opportunity, and, you know, you are part of, you know, that third biggest point in somebody's life. And it's something that in a lot of cases, something that you're changing, not just the, you know, the people that you are directly working with, but, you know, generationally, that you could be helping, you know, their family for generations to come, or they have their kids that are moving in, and, you know, you create these connections with these families kind of all over your area. And I do think that is something that, you know, real estate agents, they need to recognize and then understand how much of an impact you have on your community.
100%. And, you know, most all of my clients, one of the biggest root things we try and kind of nail down is recognizing and understanding and being able to articulate what someone actually does in the role. Mm-hmm. It's a big part. And I try to help people think about it contextually very differently. It's to stop looking at it in the real estate agent mindset. Most consumers, believe it or not, don't really want to work with an agent. They don't. They have to because it's part. And I'm sure someone will send me a hate email right now. I don't have to. They can sell at home on their own. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, technically, yes, but no, they can't. So, you know, we don't need to get into all the NAR suits and everything else. But like the idea is you don't really need that. And or you don't really know why you need that. And so my job and the folks that I work with is to help them get grounded and more confident in what we call an impact statement. When I sit and meet with somebody, or I talk to them at a cocktail party or whatever, to very quickly be able to have them understand why I'm different and what I do. Because that builds confidence in feeling more in control of the business, my relationships with people. I used, when I was an active agent, and I still talk about it to folks like this today, and I use the Sherpa terminology, right? And Sherpas are guides that help people climb a mountain. Best mountain climbers in the world take a Sherpa. And so what I say is look, I am your Sherpa and your partner in this process. We're going to do a climb together. My job is to help you understand what to pack before the climb, to understand what you need to do at base camp to prepare for the climb, during the climb, if we hit inclement weather or problems, how to navigate those things. But the goal is to get you to the top. When we do that, you move on to the next chapter of your life and we're good, right? But that's my role and function in this. But by giving somebody perspective about what the relationship is and the role and function and how I do that, I'm a consultant. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert telling you, you should do this and you should do that and your home should be priced this. People have freedom for choice and decision. It's their decision. It's their home. It's their life. It's their stuff. I'm your Sherpa and your guide. Now, if they go, hey, we want to make a right off this cliff, I'm like, I'm not going with you on that. Have fun on that one, right? But I am there in a process to work together. And those are the healthiest and best, longest lasting relationships where I don't need to work as hard after that with all of my, like my newsletter, my open house, my just sold, my new listing, the hot new color paint your front door in spring, that like e-blast digital harassment, as I call it,
right?
Because I can just send somebody a text message 6 months later and be like, hey, how y'all doing? Not how's the house, not how's the, how are you? And it changes that dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. And then from there, you're getting, you know, those are people that are going to be your promoters within your community. And that's where all those referrals and, you know, everybody I talk to, you know, you're looking to scale up your business. That's the best way to do it, is have people send in business your way.
That's right. 100%.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your coaching, the essentials list, where people can, you know, can get more from you.
Yeah. So, you can go check me out. LancePendleton.com, is my website. You can join the essentialist, on Mondays. What I love about the essentialist is, as I said, a group of community of people who like-minded top agents across the country come together. I make it super inexpensive because I don't want people to pay a lot for coaching and things like that. But it's one sheet we work from. You plan out your week. You start the week in a healthy fashion. You know exactly what's the highest priority things I need to get done. to reduce that feeling of overwhelm. So the opportunity and explanation of the Essentialist program is on there as well. I do private work with people in conjunction to, but the best place is if you go to lancependleton.com, you can check out all my stuff or hit me up on Instagram at Lancelot Pendleton. So it's a mouthful. I had to think about that one twice.
Awesome. Well, I really do appreciate you talking to us. And obviously this is a conversation that, you know, we could really like segment down and do 2 hour episodes on just about every little thing that we talked about.
100%. Michael, thank you for having me. It's a real great pleasure to be here. And it's really nice to meet you.
I want to thank Lance for joining us today and really enjoyed our conversation. Remember, if you're interested in learning more or want to check out the Essentials list for yourself, I've included a link to Lance's website, lancependleton.com, in the episode description. So once again, if you think you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or tips to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. Well, that wraps things up for this episode, but remember, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents YouTube channel. Again, I'm Michael Walter, and we'll see you on the next episode.